seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are here on case 11-0093, State of Ohio versus Donald J. Ketterer. For the appellant, Mr. Porter.
May it please the court, Randall Porter from the State Public Defender's Office on behalf of Mr. Ketterer. He would reserve whatever time is remaining after his initial argument for purposes of rebuttal, Your Honor. Mr. Ketterer would begin his argument today by focusing the court on what is probably the key issue, which is the impact of this court's prior decision in State versus Fisher upon which issues this court can address. The state has, in fact, raised Fisher with respect to four of the five propositions before the court in saying that this court really cannot address those issues because of State versus Fisher. The quick answer is that Fisher has no impact upon which issues this court can address. And if the court would bear with me for a minute, the timing is very critical on this. This court, on August 25th, 2010, remanded the case for purposes of imposition of post-release control. At that time, the law was, pursuant to State versus Bezac, was that when a case got remanded for purposes of post-release control, the defendant was entitled to a new sentencing with respect to all those counts that post-release control had been incorrectly imposed. On December 2nd, 2010, the three-judge panel conducted the resentencing in this matter. It conducted the resentencing pursuant to the remand and pursuant to the law then in effect, which was State versus Bezac. 3 weeks later, this court issued its opinion in State versus Fisher.
So did they do it wrong at the time? What did they get wrong?
What they got wrong is what's set out in the, he got a, if I can use the term, de novo review on the five counts.
Right.
The issue is, and he has appealed some of those issues in the propositions that he's raised. What the state is suggesting is because the scope of remand changed and it's much more limited, the remand for purposes of post-release control, that this court should apply the Fisher standard with respect to issues that can be raised as opposed to the Bezac standard, which
and was... And you want the Bezac standard?
Want the Bezac standard.
And because of the timing, you argue that's what, in fact, applies.
That is correct.
Okay. So then what relief is your client entitled to under the Bezac standard?
He's entitled to, as set out in the propositions of law, that the court erred with respect to imposition of court costs, with respect to imposition of a fine, with respect to denial of discovery when it went back down, and with respect to the ally defense issue.
What discovery was he contemplating?
This was, again, a change of rule. When he was originally at trial, the original Criminal Rule 16 discovery provisions applied. By the time it was remanded for the second resentencing hearing, the Criminal Rule 16 had applied. Clearly that if you look at Criminal Rule 59, I believe it's Y, those standards with respect to the new criminal rule were applicable. He was certainly entitled to such things as witness statements, as to reports and things of that nature. It becomes important, I don't think we necessarily have.
Counsel, what does that have to do with the resentencing?
At the resentencing, he looked at a significant sentence, even though the death penalty was not in play at the time of resentencing.
You're saying, pursuant to Rule 16, the state needed to provide additional discovery,
yes,
including witness statements.
Yes.
All right. Are you saying that you were not provided with all of the information first time around?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And does the state agree with you on that?
I believe they agree, and the issue is just whether he was entitled to the benefit of the
new rule 16.
New rule, Your Honor.
Okay, but again, what do the witness statements have to do with the resentencing? Okay.
Under 2929.12c, he had a right with respect to sentencing to offer any mitigating factor that might exist. As the court was aware, this was a relatively close case when you first had it on direct appeal, not with respect to guilt, but respect with the appropriate sentence. There were two concurring opinions. Mr. Ketter certainly would have liked that information to see what the witnesses said, to nothing else, to remake and probably make a better argument with respect to his mental health at the time, with respect to his intoxication.
The witness statements addressed his mental health?
With respect, they would have, and again, I haven't seen the statements.
These physician statements that you were deprived of?
He never got any of the statements, Your Honor, given that the original discovery was under the old rule.
But were you deprived of psychological or witness or physician statements?
Not physician statements, but witness statements would have, which would have indicated how he was acting, how much he was impacted by his intoxication, how much he was impacted by his mental illness at the time.
And he went to trial, correct?
He pled guilty. There was a mini trial, so to speak,
in front of the three-judge panel.
Before a three-judge panel, and then right. Went to sentencing.
Counsel, this is the third time this case is up to us. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And originally, when there was a sentencing for Mr. Ketterer, there was the opportunity to have the witnesses presented, to have mitigation, to have everything done, and it was done in accordance with the law at that time. The problem is the post-release control under the old case law opened it up for an entirely brand new sentencing. Is that your position?
That is correct, Your Honor.
But there was the possibility at the very beginning for all of the procedure to be done correctly. I mean, there was no truncation of the sentencing hearing the first time, correct?
You're correct, but again, given that there was the scope of the criminal rule 16 that was in effect at the time of resentencing certainly would have given him access to much more information.
Why isn't this res judicata?
First is that this is the initial time that it was before the court, if I'm correct, with respect to the expanded criminal rule 16, Your Honor. Could not have been litigated prior because the expanded rule just did not exist. Continuing with my argument with respect to why the court should apply the BZAC rule as opposed to the Fisher rule is that to apply the Fisher rule now is to a certain degree or actually to decrease or to extinguish certain rights he had under BZAC. He had a right to a full hearing under BZAC. He's not arguing he did not get that at the time of the second remand, but what he also had a right to is to raise those issues in his appeal to this court. By applying Fisher, it drastically reduces the scope of his appeal to this court.
So we have to, first of all, accept that BZAC controls here and not Fisher.
Correct.
That's our first, and that's obviously, we'll hear from the state on that. And then if we do decide that a Fisher controls, then he is only resentenced for the limited purpose of post-release control, correct?
Correct.
And your discovery argument fails?
No, because at that point, the criminal rule exists there. It may be more difficult to determine prejudice, but the criminal rule 16 is expanded, apply to that.
How does the criminal rule 16 information that you seek affect post-release control, which is a time certain? The only difference here is the application of the post-release control, but the amount of time is statutorily provided.
When the court issued Fisher, the way it's really a rule of res judicata, and those issues or barred that were raised or could have been raised. Res judicata is a, as this court has held, is a doctrine of fundamental fairness, and that if the defendant can prove that there was a fundamental unfairness under the old proceedings, he would get to at least make an argument to expand the scope of the rehearing under Fisher. Certainly, discovery then would have helped him to identify whether there was any fundamental fairness, unfairness, when it went back down.
Mr. Porter, if I could take you back to Justice Pfeiffer's question. I think he asked about the three-judge panel's sentence on remand. What was defective about that procedure, in your view?
If I understand your question correctly, when it went back down the second time,
yes,
they did conduct de novo review, if that answers your question, Your Honor.
And what should they have done, in your view?
I think they properly conducted the de novo. I think there were errors in the way they conducted the hearing, but they properly applied a de novo hearing standard.
So you're satisfied with that?
I'm satisfied with that. The problem arises because he has raised propositions of law errors with respect the way that they applied it. And if you apply the Fisher holding as opposed to the BZAC holding, it certainly gives the state an argument that this court can't reach at least some of his propositions of law.
Well, but if we can, what you're here to sell us that your client gets further relief. So what, in what respect?
He gets relief in that the court should remand the case for additional resentencing. There's clearly an error the way court costs were imposed under State versus Joseph.
So we're talking about a guy who's facing a death sentence. You wanted to go back a fourth time to haggle about court costs.
Court costs become critical in that it, for him, because he has very limited income, and to the degree the state seeks after those, he can lose that little income he does. So it's significant.
You're talking about his prison account?
Yes.
Have they attempted to dip into that?
I do not believe they have, but they certainly have that opportunity if they so desire. The second thing he's asking that...
So far, it seems to me you're presenting the thinnest of threads here. You've got anything else?
But let me try an additional answer to that if I could. The same issue was there or could have been raised in Joseph when the issue was before this court, and he was serving pretty much a life sentence. And the court at that point could have determined that he really had a de minimis interest and there was a no interest in remanding it, but in the fact the court did. The second issue that's important, and it's somewhat related, is that the court imposed a $5,000 fine. This is on an individual that has significant intellectual deficiencies, is of an older age, 60 years of age, I can say that being my
Has
age.
No property.
Has no property.
So isn't that an academic exercise as well?
And illegal sentence, Your Honor, is an illegal sentence regarding whether it's an academic exercise or not. He's also asking for a remand during the course of these proceedings on appeal. The court came out with State versus Johnson. He's asking the court to address the allied offense issue. Again, the state's adopted the position since Fisher applies rather than BZAC. that this court can't reach that issue. And he's also addressing the discovery issue, which the court has addressed.
So it's about court cost and the imposition of a $5,000 fine and whether or not there are allied offenses under subsequent case law.
Subsequent cases.
And then the discovery issue.
Yes.
That's where we are.
That's where we are.
Thank you.
If the court has no additional questions of me, I point out that those are significant issues. I know, looking at it from an individual that looks at the lengthy sentence, if not altogether, but they remain in the legal sentence. Looking at it from a distance and trying not to look at it from an advocate, but to impose a $5,000 fine on a person that's significantly mentally ill.
Was that addressed by his counsel at the time that the three-judge panel imposed the $5,000 fine?
It was not. I made a presentation and argument for a reduced sentence, but it did not include fine. I'm not aware of any.
Is that a mandatory fine?
It was not a mandatory fine. And the only cases I'm aware of that impose a duty to object, it's with respect to a mandatory fine.
Counsel, let's assume that we allow resentencing. Let's assume that. Is it possible that your client would get the exact same sentence?
It is possible he would get the exact same sentence. He would certainly get to first make that argument with respect to court costs, which this court afforded in the prior case, Mr. Joseph being permitted to argue. And in fact, my recollection is the court waived court costs. And
so it's not the sentence itself, it's the procedure in getting to the sentence that you're saying is illegal.
It's.
Because if you're saying the sentence is illegal, to me, that means it can't be imposed at all. But if you're saying that it's the procedure by which the sentence was reached that you're arguing against, it's possible that when you get what you're seeking, a resentencing, that your client might get the same sentence.
It is possible, yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
If the court has no additional questions, I will reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Alcom-Howey.
Chief Justice, may it please the court. Fisher does apply here in this case, based on this court's decision on August 25th, 2010. Let's highlight a few paragraphs of that decision. Paragraph 1. Because mandatory post-release control was not properly imposed, however, we remand the case for the trial court to conduct a hearing under 2929.191. This court made it clear in paragraph 72 that RC 2929.91 applies in this case because Ketterer was resentenced after July 11, 2006. In that section C, it indicates only it is limited to the imposition of post-release control. The heading of that section is correction of judgment of conviction to include supervision information. That is what the statutory provision provides. Just
counsel, you're saying because Fisher reaches back to 2006 going forward, Ketterer falls within that time period contemplated by Fisher?
Yes, Your Honor. And this court did find that to be. It already stated that in 2010. 2929.191 applies in this case. And the hearing was limited to, again, another paragraph of this court's decision, paragraph 84. Because the trial court failed to properly impose post-release control, the case is remanded so that Ketterer may be given the proper terms of post-release control. What's also key is paragraph 66. This court held Ketterer's non-capital sentences are not void. That is in paragraph 66. Other than the post-release control, everything else remained the same. The trial court at the beginning of the hearing acknowledged that this is a resentencing limited to post-release control.
Where is Ketterer now?
In prison?
Yeah, like, we have a lot of prisons. I was just looking at the original sentence, and Justice Lundberg Stratton wrote a long concurrence that I joined. Is he on death row, or is he someplace where he's getting attention to his mental illness?
I believe he actually is on both, because in the transcript, in the resentencing, it indicates his attorney requested an immediate transfer back to the correctional facility where he can take his medication. So he is under medication right now.
Right. At what location?
If I recall, my memory is, I believe it was Madison, maybe.
Okay.
It was a correctional facility he requested to go back. With regards to Fisher does apply here based on this court's decision, even though Bezac was prior to this court's decision in Ketterer, this court still limited the resentencing to post-release control. This is why Fisher applied. This court was leaning towards these sentences that have already been reviewed twice are now just, the error is just the post-release control. What appellant is requesting that the trial court should have sua sponte disregarded this highest court's decision in finding that allied offenses were not available here. The convictions were not allied offenses. That was the specific preposition of law that this court overruled, Preposition Law 6. This court held that the aggravated burglary, aggravated robbery, and aggravated murder are not allied offenses of similar import in 2006. Yet appellant wanted the trial court in 2010 not only to sua sponte raise the issue, but also disregard this court's prior decision. That is contrary to the law, case of the law doctrine.
Well, let's assume that could you address these other issues that he raised? If they were in play, the issue of further discovery, the issue of the $5,000 fine, and the issue of the court costs.
Okay. Discovery was provided to appellant. Even though appellant pled guilty, this court held, because it's an aggravated murder, evidence must be presented. The state must present its evidence, and there was a hearing. Not only was a hearing on guilt, but there was a 3-day mitigation hearing as to the proper sentence, which the unanimous court, the 3-judge panel, found death was appropriate. So there was testimony. Witnesses testified. All this was available to appellant. Not only were there numerous, I believe I counted about 14 responses to appellant's discovery by the state prior to these hearings, but also the witnesses testified. This was all available to appellant. Not only this, one of the issues that was raised in 2010 that this court overruled was the Brady violations, whether the state provided appellant with all evidence and whether it did violate Brady. And then this court's decision, they said, what was, excuse me, Your Honor, just trying to find it. Paragraph 28, paragraph 33. This court held that these Brady requests lack merit because the information about Williams and Gabbard's activation and their criminal record is not material to Ketterer resentencing. Similarly here, the resentencing was limited to imposition and notification of the proper post-release control. Any evidence discovery is not relevant. This is a statutory mandated requirement. The trial court had no discretion. If you commit a felony offense, 2967.28B mandates the trial court to impose post-release control. And the duration depends on the felony offense. There is no discretion here. Any discovery is not material here. What is material is the trial court properly notifying appellant of the duration of post-release control and the consequences of that violation. This is what occurred here in this case. Based on this court's remand, the trial court followed it, imposed the prior, exact prior sentences, the exact fine, and the exact court costs. The exact court costs that were here in back in 2004, the exact fines that were in 2004. Those issues, not only were appellant aware of the fines, the court costs, he failed to raise them in his first direct appeal.
Counsel, I'm not sure I understand your argument you're making there, though. In a post-release control hearing, are you suggesting that nothing that the defendant can present will change the post-release control?
Yes, Your Honor, because it's statutory mandated. Even the optional is based on the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation. They decide what's the duration of the optional post-release control. The mandatory is mandatory. It has to be imposed.
The duration is mandatory?
Yes, based on the felony. If it's a felony in the first degree, it's mandatory 5 years of post-release control. The trial court has no discretion on that.
So why are there hearings?
Excuse me, Your Honor, I didn't hear.
Well, if you're telling me that there's nothing that's going to be said at the hearing that's going to change anything, why would there be a hearing?
Pursuant to this court's State v. Jordan, he has to be properly notified orally in addition to a written notification in the judgment of conviction entry.
But your reading of the statute is that there is no reason for them to participate in that hearing.
Yes, Your Honor. It is a statutory mandated provision.
I understand the control is mandated. I guess my difficulty is that you're suggesting nothing that can be said at the hearing can modify the terms of the post-release control. Nothing.
No, Your Honor, nothing.
Nothing.
No.
Okay.
The only difference is if assuming that the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation reviews that and determines whether to give the optional or not. That's the only time that it would. But based on the trial court, no, nothing can affect what it's required, mandated, of what notifications it has to say. Mm-hmm. With regards to the fines and the costs, appellant had the same fines and the same costs in 2004 and again in the de novo resentencing hearing in 2007. Did he raise them in the direct appeal in 2004? No. Did he raise them again in 2007 in his appeal of the de novo sentencing hearing that was conducted? No. Yet here, not wanted the trial court to sua sponte, raise the issue. We didn't object to the fines, didn't object to the cost, and now wants to raise them after this limited remand sentencing. Based on Fisher, that is not permitted. The state requests that this court does not allow it, because the doctrine of res judicata mandates that it should not be. He had the opportunity, he was represented by counsel, he failed to raise it. With regards to the notification of post-release control in this case, contrary to appellant's argument, the term consecutive was used only when informing him of the consequences of violating post-release control. The term consecutive was not used when informing him the duration of each count, what post-release control was. In looking at the complete transcript of the trial court's notification, the judge indicates to him what the consequences could be. And those do state it is consecutive because it does attach to your prior prison term if you violate post-release control. And they can impose additional time on you such that on count two, on a 9-year sentence, they could send you back for a total additional time of 4.5 years. Do you understand that? The defendant, yes. So you could end up going 13.5 years on count two. Right, the defendant says. The trial court continues. And the same thing applies on count three. Do you understand? And that's consecutive. So they could give you additional time on that. Again, that term consecutive regarding is limited to when the trial court was notifying him of the consequences of violating post-release control, not in terms of that post-release control is consecutive.
Counsel, could you get to the allied offense argument that your opponent raised?
Yes, Your Honor. Again, the allied offense argument should not be before this court. Number one, this court has already decided this issue. Number two, the remand was limited to post-release control. What appellant is requesting that the trial court should have sua sponte raised that issue and overturned the highest court in the state of Ohio, this court's decision, finding it not to be allied offenses in 2006. It cannot be expected that the lower court should have the feel that it has the authority to overturn the highest court in the state of Ohio. That cannot be.
Was the Johnson case decided when this issue was raised at sentencing or could have been raised at sentencing? Did we already have Johnson on the books?
No, Your Honor. Johnson came after the initial direct appeal. However, Johnson came close to the time of when this court decided the 2010. The 2007 resentencing hearing was a de novo resentencing hearing, and this court decided that in August 25th, 2010. But again, this court has already decided this issue, and the remand was limited to post-release control. It was very specific. This court's decision was very specific in Ketterer regarding the remand, only remanded to impose post-release control pursuant to 2929.191. That statutory provision is based on the supervision sanctions, post-release control. This was a very limited remand that appellant is asking to expand it, not only beyond what the remand is, but beyond what the trial court has authority to do. It does not have authority to reopen an issue this court has already decided.
Yeah, one of the arguments that Mr. Porter has raised with us is, if I understand it correctly, that we should look at the timing of when the events occurred, and his position is that BZAC should control and not Fisher. Okay. What is your response to the argument that BZAC is the law that should be applied here and not the Fisher?
BZAC was decided in 2008. This court decided Ketterer on the remand in August 25, 2010. This court was aware of the BZAC decision, yet it found that the remand should be limited. This court's decision in Ketterer limits the remand. This court decision was decided almost 2 years after BZAC, yet this court held, because the trial court failed to properly impose post-release control, the case is remanded so that Ketterer may be given the proper terms of post-release control pursuant to 2929.191. And in that decision, the trial court made it clear that Section C of 2929.191 applied because he was resentenced after July 11, 2006. This is why Fisher applies here, because this court's decision was after BZAC, yet it limited it specifically to 2929.19C after July 11, 2006. And in Fisher, this court specifically held that res judicata still applies to other aspects of the merits of a conviction, including the lawful elements of the ensuing sentence, the lawful element of the fines, the lawful element of the court costs that not only were imposed prior, but failed to raise on appeal, had the opportunity, was represented by counsel, but failed to raise it in the direct appeal, the second appeal. And this court also held in Fisher, paragraph 27, only the offending portion of the sentence is subject to review and correction. In this case, it was post-release control, which is statutory mandated as to what the trial court must notify and incorporate in its judgment of conviction entry. Discovery is not required in a resentence that's limited to post-release control. The state asks that this court affirm the sentences imposed in this case, and no further remand is required.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Counsel, you've saved almost 13 minutes.
First, in response to Justice Pfeiffer's question, Donald was originally at Chillicothe. Mansfield. There was a separate mental health wing there when the other inmates got transferred to Youngstown, the rest of the death row. About a year and a half ago, Department of Correction decided that they were going to combine death row. Donald is now in Chillicothe Correctional Institute. I think a couple points are critical. Is the state relies upon this court's order in Ketter 2 on remand. You can't look at that order in a vacuum. You need to look at the law that was in existence at the time. BZAC was in existence at the time. And in fact, the trial court, when they conducted the second resentencing, used the BZAC law that was in effect. And it would be Mr. Ketter's position to be unfair to apply that now. With respect to
even though Fisher carves out a window of time and your client falls within that window.
Correct. And I think it's a very limited, and to be perfectly clear, I think there are very, very few cases that are going to be affected by this that still have direct appeals pending, that were remanded prior to Fisher, that most of those cases, their appeals will be completed already. So I don't anticipate a ruling that Fisher does not apply will apply to many other cases, Your Honor.
But right now, you're only asking for a resentencing.
That is all we're asking for, is a resentencing, Your Honor.
But not just limited to post-release control. You want a resentencing on the whole sentence for the third or fourth time?
For the resentencing, it'll be for the third time.
Third time.
Other additional points that I think are important to address is, first, with the discovery issue. The court did previously discuss or address a Brady issue. The court did not have available to it is what Mr. Ketter would have had available to him at the time of the last resentencing hearing. The court didn't have most, if not all, the prosecutors filed before it. Under the expanded criminal rule 16, Mr. Ketter would have been entitled to that, and the court would have had it to review. And I think it's important, and if I can just use my own past experience here, is I was preparing another case, memo in support to be filed in this court on Thursday. I noticed that this case, and was looking at other cases this case court had passed on a direct appeal, and noted that there were two cases the Sixth Circuit has granted relief on because the prosecutor didn't provide complete discovery. There are three other appeals pending in the Sixth Circuit where the federal district courts have granted relief on Ohio capital cases because the prosecutor didn't grant discovery. So it's, and having consulted on several other cases that are pending with Brady issues, it is very critical that Mr. Ketter have the benefit of expanded Rule 16. And I think
and
that
were
that's
those cases based on a remand for resentencing Rule 16 violations, or initially at the trial level?
They were initially at the trial
level.
And
that's not what you're arguing here. You're arguing that we need the contents of Rule 16 discovery merely for the purposes of the resentencing.
And certainly things in the file can affect resentencing for purposes of length of sentence that's available. For instance, in this particular case, Mr. Ketter, in his initial statement, told the officers that two other individuals were involved. I think that certainly would have been critical information if there's anything in the prosecutor's file to indicate that he was not only intoxicated, that he was not only severely mentally ill, but maybe that he was being helped, assisted, or played by other individuals that were supplying him.
And that's going to go to sentencing?
That goes to sentencing. 29-12C gives him a right to offer anything that would mitigate with respect to sentencing.
And counsel, in terms of sending it back, if we determine that there should be a resentencing, we would be talking about 29-29.19, correct? Because that's the full-blown sentencing hearing. Not 191, but 19.
Correct.
Okay.
I also want to touch base with, you ask about the allied offense issues. When the case was originally before the court, Johnson hadn't been decided. Johnson hadn't been decided when the case was before this court the second time around. Johnson certainly brings a different focus to it. The court did pass on the Allied offense in paragraphs 112 and 113, if I'm correct, the first time around. But the court, there was a misunderstanding of a critical fact in this case when the court did that. The court quoted another case in which the defendant had deceived someone to get within the residence and then committed the murder. This court held in that particular case, the burglary was complete at the time he used deception to get in. That's truly not the case in this particular. Mr. Ketter had permission to enter it. This is almost the classic State versus Stephan issue of where permission is withdrawn at the time that he begins to assault the individual and to rob him at the same time.
Did you actually raise the issue of Allied offenses the third time then? You said that it was in effect the second time. What about the third time? Was it raised then?
I did not raise it. I looked for the date, and it was Johnson was decided either just before or just after the second resentencing. This court has recognized it's plain error. The Allied offense issue. So even assuming Johnson had been decided, and it may well have been prior to the second resentencing, it will be plain error, and the lack of objection is not controlling.
You said it wasn't raised in the second one. Was it raised in the third one?
It was not, Your Honor.
It was not.
Not.
Counsel, there seems to be a difference of opinion here that you believe you're entitled to a full resentencing hearing, and obviously the state of Ohio does not. Were this court to remand it simply for the post-release control sentencing, do you agree with the state of Ohio that all of these other issues become irrelevant?
They aren't irrelevant at this time. I can't tell you whether the court on the first resentencing committed an error with respect to imposition of post-release control. They could well do it another time around. So to say that there will be no errors coming out of a third resentencing.
No, my question is, if it's going back only for post-release control resentencing, you certainly don't assert that you have the right to discovery for that hearing, do you?
I will, because again, Criminal Rule 16 is applicable regardless of what it's sent back down for.
Okay.
I ask you then,
if we initially remanded it only for post-release control, how would you have the three-judge panel reach the cost issue or the fine issue if our mandate said only for this purpose? And what is the vehicle to get the sentencing judges beyond the limited scope of the remand?
The way I understand Fisher, it's a res judicata case. And certainly this court has repeatedly recognized that res judicata is not to be applied when it denies fairness of the proceedings. When this goes back down, if the court sends it back down, we'll certainly be making...
I guess I'm not talking in the future, I'm talking in the past. Our order remanded it for a limited post-release control rehearing. And the court would think there may be an issue about cost, but we can't get to that issue because we're only mandated by the Supreme Court to administer with respect to post-release control, nothing beyond that. It wasn't a resentencing of de novo.
I don't think that's the way, with all due respect, that the court saw it on remand. If you
when you say court, you're confusing me. The trial court or the Supreme Court?
I'm sorry. I apologize, Your Honor. I don't think that's the way the three-judge panel saw it. The court repeatedly said, The court repeatedly says It's back down, quoting Judge Oney on page 3, resentencing on the other counts other than the other case, his it should be his death penalty case. On page 10, it is the intention of the court to reimpose the sentences. And when I hear the word repose or resentence, I believe that the court thinks that they're for de novo sentencing. And I think that
so
would
it's,
have been the
so
correct.
So it's your view that upon review of the remand from this court, the trial court conducted a completely de novo proceeding?
I do, Your Honor.
All right. Based,
and in fact, if it was, and I hate to use this term, but if it was somewhat of a fait accompli when it was sent back down, the court wouldn't have asked me to, and wouldn't have asked Mr. Ketter to make a statement in support of allocution. There would have been no point if he was just there to impose post-release control, which is somewhat controlled by the statute.
Counsel, in Ketterer, the last line of the majority opinion says, we reverse the judgment and remand the case so that post-release control may be properly imposed according to 2929-191. So we were looking at the new statute that talks about the limited sentencing, not under 1-9, which is the broad resentencing.
But I think, again, you need to read that in the context of BZAC, which said when it gets remanded, it's remanded for an entire resentencing on the counts that that was flawed post-release.
Well, this is the case that's after BZAC, and it was referring to Ketterer himself.
Okay. And the way I read it, Your Honor, is that the court needs to read that order in the context of BZAC. And to even if the court finds that Fisher applies, there are still two remaining flaws. First is the discovery issue. He was truly entitled to do that regardless of the full scope of the hearing. And secondly, that the court imposed court costs in the sentencing entry. It wasn't imposed in open court. Pursuant to Joseph, part of the court's holding in that case was he was entitled to be present for when court costs were imposed. One final point is the court has held, this court has held in State versus Wilson, that when a person is resentenced, you can in fact raise issues at resentencing that could have been previously raised. That case is cited in our reply brief. If the court doesn't have any additional questions, I thank you for your time.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.